Hi, this is Mike Morin, and it's my first episode of 40 is the New Happy. It's about finding gratification in the second half of our lives. And because this is the first podcast, I'd like to share a little bit about myself. A year ago, in my early 60s, I left a very popular local morning radio show after hosting it for 12 years. I was not asked to leave by my bosses, but rather by my heart. My 43 years in broadcasting fulfilled my childhood dream. Now, it was time to fulfill my later life dreams. Since I don't have to get up at 3:15 any longer, I have time to do other things, like a daily two-hour radio show about food and this podcast. I write newspaper columns and magazine features. I'm a home baker that may lead to a small food business. Who knows? I want to encourage others to find what makes them happy. Now, these short segments will introduce you to people I've met who believed in themselves and went on to start businesses or became volunteers. But they all bet on themselves because they believed that reaching for their dreams would make them happy, fulfilled individuals. My first guest is Carrie Lehman, a successful businesswoman whose enterprises include Tidewater Catering Group, Waterworks Cafe, Riverside Room, Bayona Cafe, and later in 2015, Unity Cafe, all in Manchester. Carrie, welcome.
Hi, Mike. Nice to be here.
All right, let's start first with your educational background.
I was born and raised in New Jersey and decided that I wanted to get out of small town living and try going to school in a bigger city, and Boston reached out to me. I ended up at Boston University and got a degree in hospitality management, which was kind of a different thing in the late 80s, as a lot of women weren't getting into that. It was more of a male-dominated field. So right at the get-go, I was jumping into swampy waters.
All right, so what jobs did you hold prior to starting your own business?
Oh, goodness. I was lucky enough right out of college. My first job was one that's near and dear to my heart, and I was hired as the assistant banquet manager at the Charles Hotel in Harvard Square. An amazing, amazing training ground. Very high-end clientele, very demanding, white gloves, silver service, something that, I was lucky enough to start at the top of the level of service standard.
Didn't feel like you were in over your head here based on the way you describe it?
Without a doubt. I went to work. I remember keenly getting on the elevator, and the banquet department was on the second floor, and I remember taking deep breaths on the elevator thinking, oh my goodness. I felt like a fish out of water. I won't deny it. My background is not culinary, as some people are surprised by that. So I right away had to prove myself, again, being in a male-dominated field, at the risk of sounding harsh, people wanted to break you. So there was definitely a sense of, you think you're going to do this, let's see what you're made of. So there was a lot of that kind of reaching in my heart and soul and making sure I was in the right places with where my head was going with this.
Tell me about where you were just prior to establishing Tidewater Catering Group.
After being in hotels and restaurants for a while in Massachusetts, I ended up in an interesting situation to come to New Hampshire. And I'll be very frank with you. I was, again, really honed into big city. And the thought of coming to New Hampshire was just daunting to me and almost a little stifling, to be honest with you. I thought it very small, very narrow-minded, especially in the culinary world. And Chuck Rolichek, the former owner of CR Sparks, changed my mind very quickly. We ended up meeting through a colleague, and at the time, the event center was under construction. So I actually interviewed wearing a hard hat. And it was quite an interesting discussion, and it took me about 2 weeks of real thinking, because I had to move and bite the bullet and move to New Hampshire.
Tell me about that aha moment when you realized that you would never work for anybody but yourself ever again.
You know, I think the moment probably came one day when I was in a meeting with a corporate recruiter, and she was trying to get me to go work she was basically trying to get me to leave Sparks and go somewhere else into the corporate world. And this is before, Mike, the onslaught of Monster.com and all these websites. So you really had to have that person-to-person conversation. And so these recruiters really tried to get under your skin and try to, tell you all the things you were missing out there. And after listening to this woman and tell me about all these other things that were out there, I realized that the corporate world really was somewhat limiting in terms of what my perspective was for myself. And I wanted to be in a big corporate situation. And I just felt at that moment that I was honest to goodness 32 years old at the time. I said, I don't have children. If I fall flat on my face, I know I can come back to this. But if I don't do this now, I never will. And I went to bed one night and woke up the next morning and started looking at my bank accounts and figuring out how I was going to have the money for this.
In other words, you were not afraid to fail.
Oh, you can't be afraid to fail. I think, although failure is a frightening thing, you have to believe in yourself. And I have always said that the people that I've surrounded myself with have always inspired me. And whether they be corporate people or they be great parents or they're great athletes, I think, I truly believe that you have no idea what you're capable of until fate puts you in a situation where you got to survive. And I've realized that I'm a pretty, pretty strong person.
You talk about having good people around you and strong family support is a plus. And I know you love your dad, but he expressed his doubts at first about this general, I guess, path in life. Can you share that story?
Oh, goodness. My father is my hero. I lost my mom when I was a senior in high school, and my dad took on a big role with three kids. And he wanted nothing more than for all three of us to go to college and have these big, successful careers, and he wanted me to be a lawyer. And so truth be told, when I went to Boston University, although I went for hotel management, the third year in, I took my law school exams, and I was accepted into law school. And my father, I thought, was going to faint when I said to him, Dad, I'm going to stay in the business. He said, it's bad enough that you went to school when you burned toast, and they're going to teach you, you know. And he said, but now you have a chance to go to law school, and you're going to stay with this stuff. And, you know, he used to say to me, you know, you're going to serve people for a living. And I said, Dad, no matter what industry you're in, you're serving people. And so you're just taking a twist on it. And, boy, sometimes I joke around. I said, Dad, are you eating your words now? No pun intended. But there couldn't be someone more proud of me. He has been, in fact, every cafe I have, he has touched. He has a carbon footprint in every cafe because I've made him part of the design. He was down here at Bayona walking through with me. But it's frightening for him because it's a tiring industry. We go to work when other people go to play. So by no means is it not a lifestyle choice. But it so is being a nurse or a doctor or a police officer. I mean, I don't go to work every day and fear that I won't come home alive. I mean, there's a totally different take on it. But people seem okay if police officers are working weekends. You have to have that same mentality in this industry. And I will tell you, truth be told, again, I wake up every day and I am so grateful. I'm so fortunate because I love what I do. I make a lot of mistakes. I learn from them. And if nothing else, I've learned humility, because the higher you climb, the further the fall. Mm-hmm. And that not fear of failure, but that understanding that no matter how good you think you are, you can still fail, keeps me going every day.
Before I knew you personally, I remember going to a few events where Tidewater Cafe was providing the food and hospitality, and I began looking forward to events where you would be there, again, not knowing you. So how did Tidewater Hospitality Group begin? Because that's where it all started for you.
So when I got out of the corporate part of my head and said I was going to open a business, the trouble was nobody wanted to give me a loan. Nobody wanted to give me a loan. There wasn't a bank in this vicinity of New Hampshire that said, oh, sure, Kerry, let's look at your business plan. I literally got walked out of four banks, and they said, forget it. So I did what I don't advise people to do, but at the time I had no choice, and I basically emptied my 401k, which I had spent 12 years building. And coming from a blue-collar family, that was a big deal. You know, you don't do that. You save and save and save. So I emptied it out. I had a small condo that I had lived in for 5 years, and I had been very aggressive in paying my mortgage, so I took a home equity against it. And between those two values and maxing out credit cards, I was able to open the catering business, and I mean on a shoestring. The kitchen where I currently am now is a sort of a basement kind of spot. My dad, again, stepped up. We did the flooring ourselves. Sheet metal that he got secondhand from jobs in New York City got driven here in station wagons. I bought all the equipment secondhand, and I just held my breath the first day you opened. The thing with some businesses is you think you're walking in and everybody's your friend. You think everyone's going to hire you. And that's just not the case. You have to build trust, and building that trust costs money. And that money has to come from somewhere. So you have to realize that you could literally go the first 6 months of your new career not being paid. And you have to be ready for that. You can't say, oh, well, geez, I have a vacation plan. How am I going to pay for the vacation? So the sacrifices begin right away.
How did you, or why did you think you succeeded in creating a niche for yourself with cafes, breakfast and lunch, places to eat in the Mill Yard where everybody else who tried that prior to you had failed? Why is it working for you?
I've said before, because I think that I listen, and I try very hard to be in tune to what people are saying, and more importantly, adapting. It is very easy when your business grows and you are, as other people tell you, successful, to get a chip on your shoulder and think, no one can tell you what to do. You've got this plan. Don't you dare come near me and tell me to change something. That couldn't be further from the truth. And I, again, it's humility in realizing that if I'm not making more mistakes than anyone in my company, I'm not running it. And that's how I believe. I try to listen very carefully to my customers. I listen to my staff. And I listen to my gut. And that's something, you know, I'll transgress for a minute, because my father said to me once, having not gone to college himself, nor my mother, said to me, you know, Carrie, I don't understand how you learned this entrepreneurial thing. There's no one in our family that gets this. How did you learn this? And I said, you know, Dad, and true story, I said, Boston University may have taught me the economics, the finance, and maybe how to not burn toast. But what you taught me is the morality, the ethics, and the common sense approach to dealing with people that has served me better than any class I took at BU. To which he quips, and what did I pay for? So, but in true form, it really is about who you are as a person. And, you know, you can be taught things, but one of the things you can't be taught is to be humble. And I've always been humble my whole life, and I credit my parents for that.
Finally, share some advice for somebody listening to your words who might think that they'd like to leave their security of a daily job and find greater satisfaction. And from the previous 10 minutes or so, we know it's not easy and it's risky. It worked out for you. So what do you say to somebody who is kind of on the fence wanting to maybe make that leap?
I have this great quote that's on my wall, and it says, success is about going from failure to failure without a loss of enthusiasm. And I have it up on my wall, and it's fading. The ink on it is fading. But I will tell you that I have little things that say diligence and confidence and, do your own thing. And it truly starts with yourself and believing in yourself. But let's face it, you have to be practical, and you have to have a safety net. So don't go into things, let's just say, too glassy-eyed. Realize that failure is possible. 1 out of 5 businesses do fail. And one piece of advice I've been given, the day you start, have an exit strategy. Know if things go wrong, how you're going to get out. And whether it's you want to sell your business, you're going to pass it off, you're going to gift it, you're just going to close it. But I've watched too many people go into it and think nothing will ever happen to them. So the other phrase I always say is, no matter how sunny your life is, rain will come. And if you don't prepare for that rain, you'll get washed away. And so you have to, every time you have a success, stash some money aside. Reinvest in the company. Don't go buy a jet ski. Don't go buy season tickets to the Patriots. And no offense to not having fun, but you're not at that stage yet. The first 5 to 7 years are a lot about bringing things close to the vest. And that's the best advice I can give you.
Carrie Lehman, thank you so much.
It is my pleasure.
See you next time on 40 is the New Happy. I'm Mike Morin. Oh, if only I'd been recording. No, just kidding.
Oh, you're so funny.
You can't come in and see me.